Now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hakes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I am your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we will be talking with Ann Hemingway, who is president of the City of Charlottesville Board of Elections. And we'll also be talking with Deshaun Langston, who is about to be a newly minted Charlottesville voter. We will be discussing Governor Terry McAuliffe's April 22, 2016 executive order re-enfranchising 200,000 plus citizens of the Commonwealth previously convicted of felony offenses. Welcome, Deshaun. Good to see you.
Hello.
And Ann, pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Ann, talk to me a little bit about what it means to be the president of the Board of Elections for the city. What do you do?
The Board of Elections for the City of Charlottesville and any community in the Commonwealth of Virginia oversees the registrar for their particular community and oversees the election process in the community.
Now, when you say oversees the registrar is the office you would go to if you wanted to register to vote.
Right.
Yes,
the registrar is the person in charge of the office of. For the voting,
registrations.
Right, right.
Okay.
And she's actually an employee of the state, which is an odd thing, but she works towards ensuring the election process for the City of Charlottesville. And the people that work for her are City of Charlottesville employees.
Okay. And who is our registrar in the City of Charlottesville?
Our registrar is Rosanna Bencoach.
Do you happen to know who the registrar is for the County of Albemarle?
I do. He's a good friend of mine. It's Jake Washburn.
Okay. So there we have it. These are the folks who actually run that process.
Right. And the two offices do work closely together to... Because our voting public is comprised of a lot of students, and they vote in. They don't know where they vote sometimes,
right,
whether they're in Charlottesville or Albemarle. So it's been very helpful to have a good working relationship with the two offices.
Cool. So tell me a little more about what you do in overseeing that office.
We work closely with the registrar, and there are issues that come up that we all work together to ensure run smoothly. And one of them is we recently changed our voting machines, basically, pursuant to legislation from the state, which required paper ballots rather than electronic voting machines.
Are we going back to the hanging chads problem?
No. In the City of Charlottesville, we have actual paper ballots that you fill out just like your tests when you were in high school.
Okay, like bubble in the,
right,
the circle?
Correct. And then that paper ballot is then inserted into a scanner, which actually reads the ballot and counts. So you have both the paper ballot for as a backup should the scanner not perform properly, and you have the scanner, which is very reliable.
Okay.
So, and it's worked well, but that's been a big project, and we recently have worked together with the school system to change the Buford precinct from the Boys and Girls Club to Buford School. Which will make it easier for the voters, I think. It's the parking will be better, the space is a little bit better, that kind of thing.
Now,
so those
you,
are the things that
I hear
we
you
do.
Talking about elections, but I don't hear you saying words like Democrat and Republican, which is what most people think of when they think of elections.
Right, because we're a two-party system right now,
right,
actually. The Board of Elections is comprised of, actually, of two Democrats and a Republican. Under the state law, the Board of Elections is a three-member board. Two of the members are of the party of the current governor, and then the third member is of the other party.
Right.
So, yes, we work together
very well.
And so
is this the entity that you work for? You've got a very deep hand in what goes on in elections in Virginia. Are you partisan?
I am partisan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a Democrat.
Do you do your job in a manner to skew the election to the Democratic Party?
No. Our overriding goal is to ensure the election process runs smoothly. But sure, I was elected by the City of Charlottesville Democratic Party.
So you were voted
I'm a proud Democrat. I was.
And how was the Republican on the board brought into that? Was he voted in as well?
Well, the Republican on the board is a woman named Patricia Moruno. She was recently appointed by the head of the Republican Party. It was a different process from the city Democratic Party.
So what if we had a Republican governor? When we had a Republican governor, would we have two Republicans on the
committee? Correct. One of the Democrats on the party. Jim Nix is the other Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Who I guess whoever's term is up would be taken off the board and a Republican would be appointed. However the city Republican Party does it, which is not the same as the Democratic Party.
So the Democratic Party elects people.
The Democratic Party elects.
And the Republican Party appoints.
Yeah, that was my understanding. It was not a transparent process that I could see.
Right.
But it happened, and Patricia's wonderful, actually the woman that's on the board. So we all work together very well.
And you guys are sort of there. The reason you have it split is to kind of check each other.
Correct.
To make sure that everything is fair.
Correct. And at the board meetings are open to the public. Anybody can come and you know, hear what we do. They can chime in if they've got an issue. So it's worked well, actually.
So tell me about, has something happened on April 22nd that has kind of rocked your world here?
A humongous thing happened.
So tell us what happened.
Well, Governor McAuliffe, I was actually out of the country when it happened, so I saw this through the news, which was incredible. But he restored the civil rights, not just the voting rights, actually, the civil rights of all persons in Virginia that have been convicted of a felony and have served their sentence and have been released from supervised parole or probation.
Okay.
So this affected, as of that date, 206,000 Virginia citizens. I think it's important to remember that it's not just your voting rights that were restored for these individuals, which is, to me, is significant. It's all your civil rights. So it's your voting rights, your right to serve on a jury, your right to run for office, and your right to be a notary public.
Wasn't it all of your civil rights?
But it's what they consider to
there was,
be.
There was one that was specifically excluded off the list, wasn't there, in the order? Did you read the order?
No.
The order,
I mean, I read the order, but I...
At the end of the order, it says this has no effect on the right to purchase or transport a firearm.
Right.
So basically,
right.
Your gun rights weren't restored.
Right. I guess
you don't think of that.
I don't think of it as a civil right. I think of it as a statutory
thing. I mean,
right.
You know,
there is that, which has been interpreted through the legislature. That you can still, as a convicted felon that's served their sentence, you know, been released from supervised parole, you can petition to have the right to carry a firearm.
So basically, if you want your gun rights restored, you have to file a petition.
Correct.
Right? And
correct.
My understanding of that process as an attorney is that it takes forever, and it's kind of like, you know, you send it into this black hole. There's not a lot of gun rights restored. But the good thing about this is that it restores everything else and without you having to file a petition.
Correct.
So
right.
Basically,
you no longer, it used to be, there were, I think, just four states that basically abolished your rights, your civil rights, if you were a convicted felon.
What were those?
Virginia, Kentucky, Iowa, and Florida. And Virginia, in the last couple of years, has attempted through Governor McDonald, actually, and Governor McAuliffe to ease that issue by allowing you to petition to get those civil rights back.
Now, you said the word McAuliffe, and I'm thinking McAuliffe is a Republican. I'm sorry, not McAuliffe. McDonald.
McDonald.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. McDonald is a Republican, but he did started the process going, actually, of easing the process of restoring those rights.
So this has actually been bipartisan in terms of the two governors who have worked on this.
Correct.
One's been a Republican and one's been a Democrat.
Correct. Now, McAuliffe took it to a degree that I think surprised everybody, really. But it does. What all it really does is it puts Virginia from one of the, you know, worst states in terms of disenfranchising
mm-hmm.
citizens to kind of middle of the road. There's two states, actually, Vermont and Maine, that you never lose your right to vote if you're a convicted felon.
You mean if you're in prison, you get to cast an absentee ballot?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. But 38 states, as soon as you've, you know, served your sentence, you've done your time, you know, you're out of supervised parole, you can vote. But Virginia's, we're not at that point yet. And he didn't completely eliminate that issue. He were not part of that 38 state. Governor McAuliffe will have to issue an executive order every month to continue to restore, roll over, you know,
every
into those.
Every month?
Well, that's what he said he was going to do. Every month, restore those rights to those people that.
Every month they'll have to figure out who they are.
A new group, yeah, will
right.
get their rights
restored. But I don't think they're going to. I don't think he has to issue a new order every month. Maybe he does.
That's what I understood.
Oh, maybe he does.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know how else he could. Those people as we go forward.
This one is for like 200,000. Then it's going to be another 200,000 next month.
Well, I don't think it'll be that many.
No, it won't be that many. But whatever it is, because he's only restored the rights of people that serve their time and have met their parole, supervised parole issues as of April 22nd. So on May 22nd, he'll have to do it as of, to those people between April 22nd and May 22nd. He'll have to keep doing it throughout his office.
So if you're
unless the legislature in Virginia, which is a possibility, probably not a probability, but it could be, it's possible that they could legislate and eliminate that disenfranchisement issue.
You mean they could legislate what he's basically doing by
Correct.
Order, but won't they be trying to legislate to stop him from doing this? Won't they be trying to,
that's what
Virginia legislature is Republican control.
Right. And they're not, apparently there's quite a few people that were not too happy about his executive order, so who knows what they're going to do. I don't know.
I wonder if they'll be able to do that or not. I think it will end up being a court battle if they
right.
do that.
Right, that's the other possibility. But I know Governor McAuliffe's April 22nd order was not a rash decision he made. Mm-hmm. It was something that he contemplated over a period of at least a year, and he was consulted with Professor Howard at UVA Law School, who's an international constitutional expert. And he felt, according to what I've read very strongly, that he had the constitutional basis to issue that order and thinks it's airtight, which isn't to say that it won't be challenged.
Right.
But I think the challenge will be politically motivated and not necessarily.
Well, everything is politically motivated. The question is, will they win?
No, I don't think they will.
And it sounds like maybe they won't.
Right.
Under the
Virginia
Professor Howard's view.
Yeah, of the Virginia Constitution.
Right. Oh, there's not even. Yeah, so the. So the
his power, his gubernatorial power arises under the Virginia Constitution.
So under the terms of the Virginia Constitution, the governor has the authority to do this.
Correct.
I wonder if we had a Republican governor elected next, and that, or a Democratic governor who didn't like this policy,
they could.
Could they reverse it?
Could
you suddenly strip all the civil rights of these people?
Right. That happened in Kentucky, I think, and I don't know the details of that, but I know that there was a Democratic governor in Kentucky who did roll back their extremely onerous laws against convicted felons.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a very conservative current Republican Kentucky governor, and he reversed that executive order. But then he did take some efforts to allow felons to reverse that so
mm-hmm.
that they could vote. But I don't know the details of that, but.
I gotcha.
But
well, it'll be interesting to watch in the
It will be a roller coaster.
The longer it stays in play, I think the harder time they're going to have rolling it back.
Right, but that hasn't stopped the Republicans trying to abolish Obamacare and
that's
things like
true.
That. Which
that's
is,
true.
Which is firmly
how many votes are we
entrenched.
On now in trying? To,
I know it's
in the
at
House?
Least at least 25 or so. I don't know how many.
Oh, I think
more
I think
than that. It's hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah, maybe it's hundreds. Anyways,
well, let me just say for I'd like to outline for people who are listening who will qualify? If I'm out there and I've been convicted of a felony 10 years ago, do I qualify under this law? And I think the questions that you need to ask in order to know if you qualify are whether you finished your active sentence. And the way prison sentences work, you might get a 20-year sentence, all suspended except 5 years.
Correct.
Right? Something like that. If you have pulled the 5 years, right, you are then put on probation, usually some kind of active supervised probation. And that active supervised probation is usually 0 to 3 years, right? So let's say you've done 3 years of active probation and you're done now with active probation. You're still on something called good behavior, right? Mm-hmm. The court will say, and you violate no law and be of general good behavior for 20 years or for the rest of your life. If you fall into that category where you finished your active portion of your sentence, you've done your supervised probation and been released from probation, but you're still on good behavior, can you vote?
Yes, you can register to vote. The order says it's anyone who's been convicted of a felony and has completed the term of their incarceration for any felony and has completed their supervised probation or parole is eligible.
And when we say term of incarceration, we mean the active incarceration
the active
term,
incarceration.
Not the 20 years hanging over your head.
It's just your jail time and your supervised probation.
So once you're released from probation or parole, once you're kind of off papers,
supervised,
as they say,
probation
supervised probation
or parole,
then you're eligible.
Correct.
And not only are you eligible, in fact, your rights have been restored. As long as that was over by April 22nd.
Correct.
Your
Correct.
Rights are restored right now.
Correct.
Now, in order to exercise your right to vote, you will have to go register to
Correct.
Vote.
And you have to register in the in the town or city where you reside. And you can go online to get your registration form. If you live in the city of Charlottesville, you can go to the registrar's office, which is in the annex, the city hall annex in the basement. You can go to Albemarle County. And, I mean, you can really pick up a registration form a lot of places in the city, in the county, online. They're available in all the libraries, the registration form. But, you fill it out according to all the information they need. And then you send it in. If you have a question about whether you're eligible, whether you're on the list, there's a website which I have that you can go to and see if your name is
you
on that
list.
You
really literally see if your name. All right.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments where I'm supposed to say something. And the thing I'm supposed to say is, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Straight Talk with Andre Hakes. I am talking to Anne Hemenway right now, who's the chair of the Board of Elections, president of the Board of Elections, in the city of Charlottesville, about Governor McCaulis' April 22 order restoring voting rights. So let's get back to you for just a second here, Anne. You're saying that there is actually a website. If I was convicted of a felony 10 years ago and I've been through this whole rigmarole, I'm done, I'm out, I'm off papers, and I want to know whether or not I'm going to run into any trouble, I want to just sort of verify that I'm eligible, I can go to a website and look and see if my name is on it?
Yep.
What website is that?
It's www.commonwealth.virginia.gov/ROR.
Read that again slowly.
It's www.commonwealth.virginia.gov/ROR. O-R.
What does ROR stand for?
I'm not sure. That's just the website that I have.
Oh, Restoration of Rights.
Restoration
That's
of Rights.
What it is. It's Restoration of Rights.
So you can. So I would recommend, if you have any questions, that you check that. Or if you're pretty sure, you can register and your local registrar, either in the city, in the county, in Orange,
you just go
wherever
there.
You are. They will have that list. That list is going to be downloaded onto their state system, which shows who's qualified to vote. So they'll know, too. That's one way. they're going to check any application they get. They have to make sure
So at this point, I'm gonna push this microphone over toward you, Deshaun, and I want to hear a little bit about your situation. You know, I've asked you to come in today because you're somebody who's on that list. So you. Why don't you start off with how'd you end up on that list? How did you end up? What's your backstory?
Well, my story is growing up in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. Me and my mother moved here in the early '80s.
And you're Deshaun Langston,
yes,
right?
Deshaun Langston.
Okay.
And you know, so I basically grew up in Charlottesville as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pretty decent childhood, but my mother was addicted to drugs, so I grew up with drugs in my environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of played a negative psychological effect on me as a child, where I started looking at things from more of a negative point of view than a positive one. So as I became a teenager and started hanging out on my own and running around in the streets, so I gravitated towards the negative side of things, you know, getting involved in drug selling and things of that nature.
Now, why'd you do that? Did you do that because you wanted to, like, you know, have a Cadillac, or, you know, why'd you do that?
Well, it was a few reasons why, you know. Being a teenager, a boy, you know, you're attracted to girls. You want girls to like you.
And, well, some boys. Most boys.
Yeah, most boys. This boy. You know, and growing up in a single parent home, not really able to get much. You know, there's been times where we had eviction notes on our door, you know, times when electricity got cut off. I never was afraid to work. I had a paper route when I was 12. I got my first job at this Burger King right up the street.
You're talking about in the parking lot where our studio is.
Yes.
Like, we could walk out the front door and throw a rock at it.
Yeah. First job.
You are a local boy.
14 years old, and, you know, and I helped my mother out. You know, if she needed the whole check, I gave it to her, you know.
Right.
And things was tight. And, you know, you 16, 17 years old, and you want a girl to look at you. You want some nice clothes on. So that's, like, one of the reasons. And just being despondent about what my future held in Charlottesville. You know, it didn't seem pretty bright, you know.
Right.
Didn't have a good education or something. The prospect of working was, you're going to be a janitor, working fast food for the rest of your life. So that was kind of like a turnoff. So you turn to what was available to you in the neighborhood, and it was quite easy to get involved into the drug culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. Did it, not proud of it, you know. It actually caused probably more psychological turmoil in my life, seeing the people that I was catering to, you know, in the condition of my community. You know?
Right.
It's like, it's not easy to deal with. But, of course, I eventually got caught, eventually had to do the time.
Now, how old were you when you got caught?
I was like 22 years old, 22, 23, going on 23.
Okay. Yeah. And what happened?
At home, babysitting my daughter, and the police came to my house, heard apparently of a phone call. Seen some trafficking going on, so-called trafficking. I'm not going to get into that, but it happened. And they came in my house. They found some drugs. And
did they have a search warrant?
No.
Did you just let them in?
I did. Let them in. And it was kind of like a throwing in the towel type of gesture. You know what I mean? I wasn't trying. I wasn't... And plus, my daughter was in the house. I wasn't trying to be opposive to what they was trying to do. I wanted to make it as smooth as possible.
So right.
They did. They found the drugs and everything, and that led into me being incarcerated for 87 months.
87 months is 7 and change?
Yes, yeah, 7 years, 3 months in the federal system.
Wow.
Yeah, first time.
At 22.
22, first time convicted, you know. I had a couple of misdemeanor charges and stuff like that, but this was the first real trouble I got myself into.
Right.
But you could take lemons and make lemonade. So during that time that I was incarcerated, my goal was to better myself, to be a better citizen once I come back out here in the bands of society, and to be a good father to my daughters. I had two daughters at the time. I'm now a father of four. I got two young sons now. And that was my goal. I took the time to educate myself. I got a GED. I took some college courses. I took a paralegal class. I did whatever it took to utilize that time to the best of my ability.
You took a paralegal class in prison?
I did, with Blackstone.
Paralegal, wow. Okay.
You know, corresponding course. And, and that just was my focus. I was like, I won't have no more time to give these people. I will be 30 years old when I come home. You're talking about somebody getting locked up at 23, going on 24.
Right.
I spent the majority of my 20s in prison.
Right.
And that's what I did. I came home. I moved back to Detroit originally because I didn't want to come around and be in the same environment that I was in that got me locked up in the first place. So
were you thinking if I come home, I'll hook back up with the same people and find myself back in trouble again?
I mean, yeah, I don't want to blame nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
I just was going off of who I knew I was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it would be a lot easier with the environment that I was more familiar with to be drawn into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew it was
mm-hmm.
going to be a difficult time coming out of prison and trying to work and build myself back up.
So now, you were from Detroit.
Yeah, originally.
But how old were you when you moved to Charlottesville?
Like 8 years old, to 8 years old.
So you'd just been a child there.
Yeah, this was my first time as an adult in my hometown. So.
Okay. So when you moved home to Detroit, what'd you do?
Well, I had a strong support system in Detroit. The majority of my family was there, a lot of aunties, uncles, cousins that was willing to let me stay with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, eat their food, sleep on their couch, whatever they could offer me.
So your family took care of you.
Yeah, my family took care of me and gave me an opportunity to get my feet up under me.
Now, how does the racial makeup of Detroit compare to the racial makeup of Charlottesville?
It's drastically different. You know, it's a majority blacks in Detroit, 85%.
85%?
Somewhere around it.
African-American.
Yeah, African-American. And, you know, it's very different. When I moved here, you went from being in a class where you might have one, two at the most white kids in your classroom
mm-hmm.
to being one of three black children in the classroom. So that was like a real drastic cultural shock for me moving down here.
Right, at eight.
At eight, you know. But I'm very adaptable.
The city schools or the...
Yeah, I went to Greenbrier at first.
Okay.
Then Hollymead.
Uh-huh.
Then Greer. And basically, mostly Albemarle. Greenbrier was the only city school I went to.
Right.
Jack Jewett and Albemarle, so... Yeah, I mean, my childhood was pretty good here in Charlottesville. You know, growing up, new experience, got to run around in the woods and swim in rivers and stuff like that.
And do you ask that question because you think the racial makeup of the city schools is different than the county schools?
Yes, it is different. It's much different.
So that's sort of why that experience was what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a culture shock, but like I said, I'm very adaptable, and I was able to deal with it,
yeah.
You know? But.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for just a second because, you know, other people are supposed to say things. And then we'll be right back. Welcome back. So this is WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville, 94.7 FM. I am Andre Hakes, and this show is called Straight Talk. I'm here today with Ann Hemenway, president of the City of Charlottesville Board of Elections, and Deshaun Langston, a newly eligible Charlottesville voter. And we are talking about Governor McAuliffe's restoration of rights that happened on April 22nd. Deshaun, you were just sort of giving us a little backstory and saying that, you know, you had essentially lost your civil rights in Virginia by being convicted of a drug felony at 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You went back up to Detroit, where you were from, where you had come from when you were 8 years old, and sort of, you know, got a job and kind of, you know, went on with your life. You ended up coming back to Charlottesville, obviously. Here you sit in my studio. Mm-hmm. How did you end up coming back here?
Well, I was up in Detroit working. Involved in some home building skills. I learned roofing and things of that nature up there. And in 08, you know, it got hit really hard, that foreclosure situation. Detroit was one of the cities that got hit, like, real hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it became very difficult to maintain work up there, especially in the buildings trade. Roofers was getting laid off heavily. You know, I was
and that's what you do.
Yeah, that's what I do. And I was having a long distance relationship with my now wife, Christina Fagans Langston.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we decided that, you know, we need to bring it closer to home. So mm-hmm. I was more familiar with Charlottesville than she was Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So we started preparing for me to come back down to Charlottesville. But while I was in Detroit, I was able to vote in the state of Michigan as a felon. So in the election, the presidential election for 2008, I was able to go to the ballot, and I voted, and I believe my vote counted.
Wow. Well, you know, that's something I never really thought about. I mean, that you might be a voter and move to another state and then suddenly be disenfranchised by moving. You must have loved that woman.
I did.
To come down here.
I did. And, well, you know, we have a beautiful sons together. So, you know, it was the voting wasn't going to keep me from, you know, moving on with my life, you know. I mean, losing my privilege to vote, leaving the state of Michigan and coming back to the state of Virginia. I felt like I could contribute in other ways other than voting. If I wanted to get involved in the political arena, I could support whoever candidate I wanted to get in office. Mm-hmm. I can get out there and
help
be vocal about what they stand for and what I believe they would do for our community. But when April 22nd came around and they said that this many people was going to be able to vote again, it kind of excited me because that added on to how I can contribute to what goes on in my community.
Yeah, how did that feel? How did you hear about it?
Facebook!
We love Facebook.
I hear a lot of things.
Now that I think about
Facebook.
It, that might be how I heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and sometimes I see stuff on Facebook, I don't actually believe it until I see it on the real news.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's how I'm like, is this true? And, you know, I kept on scrolling.
Uh-huh.
And then my good friend, Harold Foley, who's works for Virginia Organizer.
We've had him on the show before.
Right. And he called me, like,
I don't know, man.
He called me and let me know. He's like, man, did you ever? Because he told me a while back how to get my rights back. And I think I tried it online or something. And I don't know if it went all the way through or not. But, you know, my schedule is very busy. I got children at home. So I just kept on going on with my life. And then he called me like, man, did you hear about it? And he's like, it affects you too. So had a couple of interviews and stuff like that, and I'm here today to talk about it.
Well, Harold and Steve Deaton were the very first guests on the very first Straight Talk show, and they were talking about you know, felons being stripped of their civil rights and all the terrible effects that this has, not only on those individuals, but the detrimental effects on the community at large of having such a large disenfranchised population. So
exactly.
How fitting that Harold Foley is the one who calls you up and says, hey, guess what?
All right. And me and her go way back. I've known her for over 20 years now, you know, from the same neighborhood, basically. And it's ironic because when we was just some young men in the neighborhood talking about, you know what I'm saying, our conditions and what the future may hold for us, and to watch Hurl develop into the man he is today, you know what I'm saying, it's phenomenal to me, and still have him as a friend.
Harold's a Charlottesville institution.
Yeah.
He's helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yes, he has.
Yes, indeed.
You know? So he calls you up, and he had been trying to get you before to try mm-hmm. to apply, to petition mm-hmm. to get your rights restored. Mm-hmm. And you said you did something on the internet, but it didn't happen because it was a long process, or...
I think it was something, maybe it wasn't enough information that I put in the computer, and they told me to call this 1-800 number, mm-hmm. and like I said, I'm moving.
You're busy.
All the time. I'm like, I call it, and I just never got back to calling the number.
Well, it would have taken a long time anyway, because it had to go through a whole application process, right? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be like you just apply and suddenly you can vote, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that was...
I would have had to wait for... You know, some paperwork to return back to me.
You wait for officials to make decisions on it. Yeah, people have to review it. It'll take months.
Exactly.
You know what? It doesn't take months anymore.
Right. And that's a good thing.
And how long does it take?
Well, your rights are restored.
Right. But how long would it take for him to register to vote?
Oh, it just takes a minute.
A minute?
I mean, you just fill out the application, and you should be registered.
Hey, you want to register to vote?
Yeah, why not?
All right, let's register Deshaun to vote. Let's do it. We got the computer up.
Tell us,
Ann, what website we are going to this morning to register Deshaun to vote in the upcoming elections.
The website to register is elections.virginia.gov, and that will have a whole lot of information on it. But one of the things you can find is the registration form.
So here's what I'm going to suggest at this point. Ann, I'm going to move you over here in front of the computer. You're going to go sit in Olivia's spot for a second. And I'm going to give you this microphone. And Deshaun, you take that mic right there. And let's see if we can register you to vote online, on the air, right now.
Olivia, help her out with whatever the mouse or whatever she needs to get to.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Okay.
Are you a citizen of the United States of America?
Yes.
What is your residency status? Are you a citizen living in the U.S. and a legal Virginia resident?
Yes.
Okay. Are you registered to vote in Virginia or in any other state?
No.
Will you be at least 18 years of age on or before the next election day?
I'll be 41, May 22nd.
That would be yes. What's your birth date?
May 22nd.
Okay. Have you been convicted of a felony?
Yes.
Okay. Have you been judged mentally incapacitated?
No.
Okay. In which state were you convicted?
Virginia.
And if I could just make this statement here, even if you're convicted in some other state, your rights have still been restored. It doesn't just apply to people that have been convicted in the state of Virginia. It's in any jurisdiction.
Excellent.
Have your voting rights been restored?
Yes.
Yay. And when were your voting rights restored?
April 22nd.
Correct.
2016.
Okay. Okay. Then there's a privacy notice.
Let's go ahead and get his name, but not his date of birth and social on the air.
Okay. Can you do the typing? So your name is...
Deshaun, D-E-S-H.
Wait, you have to put the mark. Sorry.
D-E-S-H-O-N, L-A-N-G-S-T-O-N.
Do you have a middle name?
Russell. R-U-S-S-E-L-L.
Okay.
date of birth?
We'll do that off the air.
Okay.
And then got that information.
Gender is male.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we'll do Soch off the air.
Right.
Got that over there, too, right?
Yeah, she's got that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Virginia driver's license?
Yes, I do.
Do you consent to the use of your DMV signature to register to vote?
Yes.
And then we'll do that.
Private.
Off the air.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll do that. Any identifying information off the air.
Right. Okay, then I think we can go to next.
Hold on.
Oh, we have to fill that.
You gotta look at it. There you go. No.
The governor's proclamation also states that you may be eligible. His restoration of rights may apply in other states too. For instance, if you fall under his proclamation, mm-hmm. you may be able to vote in some other state if that state so allows. Some states it won't, but in some states it will. So it does have a very broad impact, not only in Virginia, but in other places as well.
Cool.
And while we're waiting, I'll just make this point, too, that as of yesterday afternoon, there were 16 people in the city of Charlottesville that came in and registered to vote. In Albemarle, there were over 22 people. And in what I heard, which I thought was amazing, in Richmond, this happened, his proclamation was issued on Friday the 22nd. And by Tuesday, you know, midday Tuesday, in the city of Richmond, there were over 100 people that came in to register to vote.
That's cool.
Yeah. So people are excited about
Excellent.
It. More yeah. excited, I think, in some ways than 18-year-olds that, you know, when they have the opportunity.
Right.
I don't see huge numbers of people coming in necessarily. So I hope it does what I'm seeing from the people that are affected by the April 22nd proclamation by the governor. I hope it inspires our young people to come out and register, especially 18-year-olds, because it is it's such an important and empowering, you know, thing to be able to vote for somebody.
I think, like, in my particular situation is, like, when I was younger, and I might not have had that much faith in the voting and the system, then it wasn't a big deal. But after maturing and understanding that my voice do matter, mm-hmm. and that and especially somebody like in my predicament that whose rights was taken away, and you can see you got a broader view of your community now, and you have something to contribute. And you can't contribute at the ballot. So that's where all the excitement comes from. It's like, now I have something to say. I got a point to make. And now I can go to the ballot and speak on my behalf. And it's a great feeling.
That sounds like it. Yeah. And it's not just voting. And you were saying that there are other rights as well that are restored. Now, I sort of made a point that the gun right wasn't restored, but mm-hmm.
right.
what other rights were restored by the proclamation?
Your right to serve on a jury, which, mm-hmm. you know, is important.
Mm-hmm.
And your right to run for office, which is really important.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference in Charlottesville.
That's awesome.
And your right to be a notary public, which mm-hmm. is just something you can always do.
That's one thing that I remember, too, when I was being sentenced, is that the judge told me that I would never be able to do any of those things again. So right. having that restored, then, like, I could take it a step further other than voting. So if I'm not satisfied with how people is running office,
right.
not saying that I'm going to run for office or anything, but that's it's an option now, you know,
yeah.
as opposed to just a few days ago, it wasn't.
Right.
You might run for the Board of Elections someday.
Right.
Hey.
You just never know.
You never know.
Or the school board or, you know, there's
you
a
never
lot of
know.
Opportunities.
Yes. A lot of opportunities. Who knows which way my heart will go?
I would just put
in the near future.
All right, I think we got to have a little more information to finish this up here. Looks like Olivia's working on it right now, and what we're inputting here is
residence address. And then it asks for a phone number. So we're going to write that down. Unless you want everybody to call you.
Right. You'd be calling, phone be ringing off
maybe
the
you
hook.
Don't care. Maybe you'd like them to call you. I don't know. And then an email address.
I have one other little point to make, too, just for our listeners, which is one of the questions that we get at the registrar's office is whether an individual who's been convicted of a crime as a juvenile has lost their civil rights. And generally, as a juvenile, you're not convicted of a felony unless you've been tried as an adult, which is unusual, actually. So most people that are convicted in the juvenile court are not convicted of a felony, and they have not lost their rights to vote. So when they fill out their registration form and it asks if you've been convicted of felony, they say no.
Okay.
But the people that are affected by the April 22nd proclamation by the governor can state that they have been convicted, and should, if they've been convicted of felony, they have to say they have been, but their rights have been restored as of April 22nd. Right. And you no longer have to get a special grant to say your rights have been restored. They've been restored.
So we're basically at the point on the form over there where we're just confirming the information that has been input. And there's a little button over there that says submit. I'm thinking maybe you should push the button, Deshaun. Go on over there and take a peek at what's on the screen.
And you need to swear or affirm under felony penalty for making willfully false statements that the information provided on this form is true.
So look at it. Okay. Make sure we entered it all right.
Yeah, everything looks right.
All right.
Yeah, everything's looks
good.
Accurate. Mm-hmm. So I'll press this button right here.
Yep. What does it say?
Your voter registration application has been submitted.
Yay!
Alrighty. I'm so registered.
So now what happens, Anne?
Well, now this will go to the general registrar, to Rosanna Bencoach in Charlottesville, and they just have to review the application and make sure that everything's okay, and you will get a confirmation letter confirming that you're registered to vote. So then you can vote.
Wow.
But you just have to, have a photo ID when you come to vote. And just for our listeners, I just want to make this point that in order to vote in November, which is our, federal presidential election, you have to register to vote by October 17th. And again, you can register online at vote.virginia.gov, or you can come into the registrar's office to get your application, and they're also available in all the libraries. And really, there's going to be a lot of outreach to register voters in public places in Charlottesville in the next couple of months. And then absentee voting starts September 23rd, and that goes until October 29th.
Wow. We just made this happen. This happened right here.
It
took longer than a minute, though. It took what, maybe 3 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah. Under 10 minutes.
Definitely under 10 minutes. Way better than 6 months or whenever.
Right.
All right, well, let's let Olivia have her chair back. So we've only got a few minutes left, and I want to revisit that issue about additional civil rights that have been restored. In particular, I'm interested in the idea that you can now serve on a jury. And I'm wondering if you have any idea how that is going to end up being implemented. My experience as a trial attorney is when you there's a jury pool which is selected, and I think it might be selected from the voter rolls. I'm not sure. Maybe I need to check that out. But
that's my understanding. Is it's that's one of the ways that it's selected. I'm not sure it's the only way.
And then there are a series of questions that the court always asks the pool of potential jurors before they select the jurors for a trial. And one of those questions is, have you ever been convicted of a felony? I wonder now if we're going to ask that question, or if we don't need to ask that question anymore because the state board of elections, the registrars, will have already checked out whether or not you're eligible. You wouldn't be on the voter roll if you weren't. I don't know. But then why would they ask the question to begin with? I guess maybe if you had been a registered voter.
If you were a felon, you probably weren't eligible to be on the jury list.
Right.
Perhaps.
Right, I know, but they always ask the question, right? So you think, well, maybe they did it because there might be somebody who was on the registration,
right,
who was voter, who then was convicted of a felony in between, and so they might still be on the list.
Or they were convicted of a felony, you know, completed their sentence and supervised parole and was able to petition the state to get their rights restored.
Mm-hmm.
That was available in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I wonder how it's going to work. I mean, one of the issues you always have in court when you're doing voir dire, which is the selection of jurors, and you ask people questions, is you don't want to embarrass somebody,
right?
You don't want to. So sometimes, if you have a sensitive case, let's say you're doing a sex crimes trial, you don't say, "How many of you have been raped?" Right. You want to know if there's somebody on the jury who may have been the victim of a sex crime, because you would want to know whether or not that might be so traumatic for them that they couldn't be fair and reasonable and just in their hearing the case. Right. But you wouldn't ask it that way. You'd ask it, in a different way. You might say, you or anyone you know or a close friend or family member ever been the victim of. So I wonder how they're going to address this. If they're going to ask that question and then ask you if you have had your rights restored, and, will people know how to answer that question? I suspect there will be people who won't know that their rights were restored.
Right.
Anyway, it's going to be a very interesting.
I mean, this just happened on Friday, the governor's executive order. So I think there does need to be some public education about what this means, who's eligible. Not only for registering to vote, which is really the only thing that's gotten a lot of publicity, but for these other civil rights as well.
Well, being on a jury or running for office.
Right.
You can run for office now. Imagine you who have been through this system could run for an elected office in which you could have an effect on the system itself. That's pretty amazing. Deshaun, is there anything that you want to say before we close up today about, what this means to you personally, or what you would encourage other people who are in the same position to do?
Well, personally, it means it's a pretty big deal to me, being able to vote, being able to possibly run for office or something like that. I mean, it's a lot to grasp, but I would encourage others who was in the same predicament as me that if you're not registered, go register. If you want to participate in what's going on in our community, and be a part of it by participating. And that's very important. If you don't like certain things that's going on, you can, instead of having those conversations at home and complaining, you can be more vocal about it now. You know what I'm saying? You can get your point across now, and I encourage that. I think that Charlottesville is moving in a positive direction. A lot of things that happened over the course of the past few years since I've been back home that leads me to believe that, the table is open for discussion on many subjects, and we can come up with solutions to some of the problems that we feel like might be holding us up. So,
well, I think if you are eligible to vote and you don't vote, then you lose a certain right to grouse about it.
Exactly.
Ann, is there anything else you want people to know moving forward about their rights and what they should do?
Well, I think there are these websites that we talked about. So if you have a question about whether you're one of the the people whose rights have been restored, you can check it out. And the state has a list. Also, if you want to register to vote and you have some questions about the form or how you respond, I really encourage people to just go to the registrar's office in the city of Charlottesville and ask the ask somebody. Then they're more than happy to help. There is another question that has come up, whether the governor's executive order affects people who are not United States citizens. And actually, their civil rights have been restored, but non-citizens are not eligible to vote or serve on a jury or run for office. So in a way, it doesn't help you too much, but you are eligible to be a notary public. And just knowing that it does extend even to non-citizens is significant to me.
So we're going to post the websites that you mentioned today, and the website where you can check your name to mm-hmm. see if you're on the list, and the website where you can actually sign up to vote. You can actually register. We're going to post those on the Straight Talk Facebook page. So if anybody's listening to this now or in the future on the podcasts and wants to do the same thing that Deshaun just did, that will be something you can do. I want to thank you guys for coming on today and doing this for me and for everybody in the community.
You're making this information so available.
I think it ought to be available. I think it's about time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me up here too, man. Being able to get this message out there it feels good.
Deshaun, will you do me a favor? When you get your confirmation mm-hmm. of registration, when you get your voter registration card in the mail or whatever form that comes, would you send me a little Facebook post or a message or something so that I can tell people, you know, this is done, the card's received, and here's how long it took?
Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
Thank you so much for that. All right, everybody. Y'all have a great weekend. This is Andre Hakes signing off for Straight Talk.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hakes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August, engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.